T-minus 59. Gravesen Hotel, Ankara, Turkey. Billy Kendrick had stayed in his fair share of Gravesen hotels around the world and had met all kinds of eminent people during his stays. He had also seen his fair share of media scrums on the curbside and been involved in more than a few himself, but the sight that greeted him upon his return to his hotel in Ankara was like none he had ever personally experienced. This seemed like a welcome fit for a president like Valerie Slater, a Hollywood starlet like Caitlin Judd, or an interplanetary emissary like Dan McCarthy. But Billy? Despite what his team had discovered nearby, and despite his unsettling recent detention, Billy's instinct was still to look behind him to see who the scrum was really there to see. Of course, there was no one behind him, and all eyes were on him, because for now, no story in Turkey was above Billy Kendrick. William Godfrey had been surprisingly diplomatic during his speech, in regards to Dortlu Tepe-related events, at least, and Billy had been almost as surprised by that while he listened on the taxi's radio as he was now to see the size of his welcome party. Exactly who had leaked news of his incarceration, he didn't know, but he knew someone had, given the occasional English questions that the reporters threw at him. The nature of these questions, focusing on why he had spent a night in a cell, at least suggested to Billy that no one had leaked news of his major archaeological discovery. He knew better than to think this would stay quiet for long, but a few quiet days for things to settle down would be good for everyone. The reporters and photographers did seem friendly enough, fighting only amongst themselves for the best angles while the hotel's experienced security staff formed a cordon to ensure Billy reached the lobby safely and that the horde couldn't follow. Once inside, Billy heard a gentle voice calling him towards the main reception desk. He walked over, trying not to show any of the impatience and desperation to lie down that he was feeling. "Hi," he said. The receptionist leaned in slightly closer.
"Timo Fiori asked me to tell you that he's in room 901.
"Here?" Billy asked with a shocked gasp. "At this hotel?"
"He arrived an hour ago," the receptionist replied. "Just before the crowd."
Billy thanked her and went on his way. In the elevator, he didn't hit 4 for his own floor, but rather rode to the top floor, 9, and knocked twice on the door of its corner suite. As though he had been waiting with his hand on the lock, Timo pulled the door inwards and embraced his old friend.
"Billy," was all he said.
"Timo," Billy replied, hugging him back just as tightly. "I know you tried to get me out on your own. He told me." There was no need to ask who he was, and Timo's shoulders sunk at the reminder of the debt they now owed William Goddamn Godfrey. He didn't yet know that Billy shared the same concern, but it was a natural enough one to have when dealing with a rat like Godfrey. "But do you know why all those press and paparazzi are downstairs?" Billy asked. "Godfrey didn't mention me in his speech, and how did everything play out anyway? I feel like I'm 10 steps behind." Timo encouraged Billy further into the vast suite, where he soon found physical comfort on a couch softer than any he had ever even dreamed of. Timo settled in an adjacent armchair and told Billy the full story, from his mysterious Turkish language phone call through to his eventual contact with the McCarthys. Billy perked up at that part, with Godfrey's discretion making more sense in his mind now that it seemed so likely that Emma had spoken to him before the speech. When Timo's retelling ended, Billy confirmed that the details about the carving itself were absolutely correct and shared his belief that a conscientious, winking police officer had been the fast-talking man on the other end of Timo's phone line. He then asked if Timo knew what was currently happening at Dortlu Tepe, but the answer was, unfortunately, no.
"You heard what Godfrey said about visiting a mysterious fourth location with Leisha and Clark, though," Timo said. "And I've got a feeling that's going to be the dig site. But in the meantime, and indeed beyond, I imagine an international team of Chinese and American guards will enforce an exclusion zone while the pillars are recklessly excavated."
"Not on Dan's watch," Billy said. "I'll reach out in the morning to thank him for his part in getting me out of there and talk about what's next. What are you thinking now about the ICA? Is there any part of your mind that thinks Buenos Aires is worth another shot? Alessandro was there in the GCC days, and it was worthwhile, for a while at least."
T-1,
Timo hesitated to answer. His thoughts and feelings on this would have been a mess even without the emotional roller coaster of Billy's incarceration and release, so with everything piling up inside his mind, there was quite literally no room for coherent thought.
"Remember the policeman who was immobilized at the drive-in?" Timo asked, seemingly randomly.
"Doug Parsons," Billy nodded, like everyone would know. "He's been talking to the media lately. Why do you ask?"
"Well, before any of this stuff, I encouraged Alessandro to track him down and offer him a research residency in Trento. We were worried about what Godfrey and his cronies might do with Uplift Research now that the shackles are off, and Doug was the only reachable contactee we could think of. But now that my bridge to Birchwood is back, I could work with Clark on that kind of thing. You know, just so we'd have our own first-hand data in case we ever need it."
Billy's eyebrows furrowed in concern. Timo certainly looked tired, but he didn't sound anything like himself. The words were rambling, but even more concerning was the fact that he had considered this a good idea before the Dortlu Tepe drama began.
"Timo, you sound like you're losing yourself," he said, as blunt as ever. "You sound like the imaginary crazed scientists and inventors we hear about in all the rumors of people trying to make an uplifter of their own, absent of access to the messengers. You know, the rumors of places in Russia, China, hell, there was even that crackpot hoax a few weeks ago about the school in Kansas where some guy said they were teaching telepathy classes. Not to mention all these rumors about governments and agencies trying to train their own telepaths now that we know it's theoretically possible."
"I'll tell Alessandro to call off the Parsons plan," Timo said. His demeanor and voice then quickly changed, however, as another thought entered his mind. "But, say, remember that camera you ordered for ultra-discreet recording?" Billy pointed to his stomach.
"I got close-up footage, and let's just say the delivery is on the way," he replied, laughing at the ridiculousness of this particular situation.
"Charming," Timo said, roaring with laughter that dwarfed Billy's. When it eventually died down, his expression remained upbeat. "Oh, and I've been invited to New York on Sunday evening. I'm going to accept the network's offer, and I'd very much like you to join me on the panel, too."
"Focus 2020?
Timo nodded. "Live episode."
"Who else is on?" Billy asked.
"Joe Crabb and Jan Geller," Timo said, disliking the very sound of the second name. Sharing this disdain for Jan, Billy's eyes rolled so hard that they almost fell out of his head. "And Emma. That one's not public yet, but she's in."
"Then so am I," Billy smiled. Automatically, Timo mirrored his expression. "But wait," Billy went on. "Are we talking about the find? Are we supposed to talk about it?"
Timo shrugged. "It's live TV, Billy. Who knows what could happen?"